We're talking about budget hearings on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republicans on the legislature's Budget Writing Committee have started their public deliberations on state budget revisions. In the Finance Committee, Republicans called Governor Tony Evers' spending plan irresponsible. What have you heard about the governor's budget? What parts do you like? What would you like scrapped? Is there a spending item you think that goes too far or that our state can ill afford? We're at 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief, and he co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So last Wednesday, Joint Finance held hearings on proposals for schools, for healthcare, transportation. What cabinet members or legislative leaders spoke before the committee?
Yeah, so we've now had a couple days of agency briefings before the Joint Finance Committee, which is actually kind of short in the, you know, historic scheme of things, I suppose. So they just didn't hear from that many Evers cabinet officials. They heard from the heads of the Department of Public Instruction, Department of Correction, Natural Resources, Workforce Development, Transportation, and Health Services. So you do see a number, especially with Transportation, Health Services, Public Instruction. Those are some of the pillars of the Evers budget. You're talking about schools, healthcare, roads. What do we hear about in the Evers campaign over and over again? Schools, healthcare, roads. And that's how Republicans who run the budget committee chose to start this thing off.
And they're there to make a case for their budgets.
They're there to make a case for their budgets. They're there to be, you know, interrogated a little bit by Republicans who run the committee. Not that it was an especially adversarial relationship there, but a lot of this is a chance for them to, in a public arena, we'll call it, kind of lay out their arguments and try to poke holes in the other side.
Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson answered some questions from lawmakers and defended some of the governor's transportation funding proposals. What was said about the idea to raise fees on heavy trucks?
There's a little bit of reluctance there from some of the lawmakers, just in the tone of their questioning. You know, like, why are you hammering heavy trucks? Some of the Republicans on that committee don't like this idea, and it would increase the vehicle registration fee for heavy trucks. So, you know, we all pay registration fees to drive in Wisconsin roads. If you drive a heavier vehicle, you pay more. Up to about 80,000 pounds is the highest vehicle, you know, I guess, registration area. And so they pay the highest fees. So this would raise fees for everybody. The argument behind that, according to the Evers administration, is that heavier trucks do more damage to Wisconsin roads. And that's not something that they're kind of pounding the table on in these hearings. But that's their argument, is that they do more damage to roads, and this is a recognition of that.
Well, there's also the gas tax that hangs in the balance. The Evers administration wants to raise it by 9.6 cents, and he's claimed that they can offset that cost by eliminating the minimum markup law. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. So let's start with the gas tax first. Evers wants to increase the gas tax by 8 cents right out of the gate. But then he wants to bring back something called gas tax indexing, which would automatically increase the gas tax to keep pace with inflation. You know, just going into the future, they won't have to take these gas tax votes. It would be indexed. So that adds another 1.6 cents to the gas. That's where you get 9.6.
Mm-hmm.
The minimum markup side of it's a little more complicated. So this is a Depression era law that prevents retailers from selling their goods below cost. And the idea behind the law was to prevent big retailers from kind of undercutting small retailers because they can and potentially driving them out of business. Evers wants to eliminate it for gas specifically, not for everything else. So he's not getting into the argument of whether we have this law for groceries. But when it comes to fuel purchases, he's saying if we eliminate this, he had said if we eliminate this, that it'll knock 14 cents off the price of gas. And you won't really feel this gas tax increase.
How are lawmakers feeling about this?
They pressured, they asked the Department of Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson at this hearing whether we could be sure to get that 14-cent decrease in a gallon of gas just by getting rid of the minimum markup. And Thompson's answer was basically, there's a lot of factors that go into the price of fuel. And just because you take away this minimum markup law doesn't mean that retailers are going to return that savings directly to consumers, and you're going to have that you can absolutely bank on this 14-cent drop.
It may not exactly translate.
It might not. And I think the fact that you had several Republican lawmakers ask about this could be a hint that they're not comfortable with that argument. I mean, some of them said as much that, Howard Markline, a Republican senator from Spring Green, said that he was uncomfortable with the idea of selling this gas tax increase with this minimum markup, that he didn't think that was going to pan out.
Talking with Sean Johnson, WPR's Capital Bureau Chief. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the gas tax raise that would fund transportation projects around the state? Are you concerned that we may be headed for a budget shortfall? What needs more funding in Wisconsin? What needs less? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Sean, Governor Evers' budget proposal has a big increase for public education spending, including $600 million increase for special ed. How do school districts fund special education currently, and how would that change if this funding got through?
They fund it through whatever they get from the state in terms of special education, and the state picks up about a quarter of all eligible special education costs. But then by law, they are required to fund the full cost of special education. This is not an optional thing for them. So whatever they don't get from the state, they have to make up locally. They have to get it out of their operating budgets. And so Evers is saying, we haven't funded this adequately for a long time now, decade at least. And he has this, it's a big infusion of cash for special education. He would have the state picking up about 60% of the cost of special education. Republicans are a little bit, I haven't heard them come out and say this definitely 100% isn't happening, at least on the Joint Finance Committee. They haven't said that, but they are questioning whether this is the way to spend $600 million.
Putting 90% of new revenue into one department.
Yeah, that was another thing that came up. Just the overall education budget has a $1.6 billion increase in it. And so that's a substantial increase in education funding. So again, that's not saying we shouldn't put 90% of our new money into this one department. But I think the fact that they're questioning it at this stage of the game gives you an idea of where they're coming from, because their message throughout this has been, we're taxing too much. We have enough revenue without these taxes. So we don't need these taxes. Well, if you don't have these taxes, you probably can't get to that $1.6 billion in education funding. So you kind of see where this is going.
What did the new Department of Public Instruction Superintendent Carolyn Stanford say to justify this increase?
She said that we have underfunded education for too long, and it's time to step up, basically. I mean, the 100% behind the increase. She said she comes from public education, and so she's definitely for it.
We're taking a look at the months-long public process of revising Governor Evers' proposed budget. We're getting takeaways from the briefings last week by state agencies on spending priorities. WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is our guide this morning. Would you like Republican lawmakers to come up with an alternative to the governor's budget? Or would you like to see the executive and legislative branches work together on the state's spending priorities? Are you concerned we're headed for a budget shortfall? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with more State Capitol Report right here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. On a Monday, it's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican lawmakers challenged Governor Evers' budget proposal last week, sending pretty strong signals that major pieces of the plan would not survive the legislature. And we're working through the takeaways from briefings before the Joint Finance Committee. Big issues: school, healthcare, roads. What have you heard about the governor's budget? What parts do you like? What would you like stripped out? Are there budget plans that go too far or that our state can't afford? Join in at 800-642-1234. WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson stays with us. Sean, before we move on to health care, let's circle back with one more point on education. Governor Evers would like to cap enrollment for school vouchers. What did we hear on that topic?
What you heard there, I think, is a very traditional argument between Republicans and Democrats when it comes to voucher schools. And Republicans are saying that the governor's no friend to vouchers or to charter schools. Democrats saying that, these schools are taking up a larger piece of the budget that would go to traditional public schools. And so we just need to put the brakes on them.
Governor Evers campaigned on expanding Medicaid and based a lot of his health care proposals on the ability to do so. What did his nominee for Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm say to the Joint Finance Committee about the expansion?
A lot of things you've heard the governor say, that this is a common sense argument, that it's going to lead to more funding for the state and more health care for people in the state. So they're looking at, they say 82,000 more people would qualify for Medicaid, Badger Care in Wisconsin, under this full expansion of Medicaid, and that it would mean a lot more money for the state. They're talking about $320 million that would be freed up in the general fund budget, which is basically the state's checkbook, because we would be paying for Medicaid with a lot more federal money than we do right now.
How much of the governor's proposals are wrapped up in this ability to get that funding?
I think you just look at that figure. $320 million over a two-year budget is pretty big. So if you pull that out, forget about what that is specifically earmarked for. If you don't have $320 million to work with, then that's a big chunk of the budget where you either have to spend less or get it from somewhere else. And we know Republicans don't want to get it from somewhere else exactly by taxes. So then you can boil it down to specific things that the Medicaid money would pay for. Stuff in the Medicaid budget, that is. Part of his budget would eliminate a waiting list for a program that serves children with disabilities. This is something that's had bipartisan support in the past, but it takes money. And so if you don't have this infusion of federal Medicaid money, it gets harder to do stuff like that.
Have you heard any Republicans in favor of the Medicaid expansion?
I have heard some Republicans, and we're talking some, say that they'll look at the idea, that they're open to the idea. I've heard much more loudly from Republican leaders, especially, that it's a non-starter. So Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has said in no uncertain terms, it's not going to pass his caucus. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, after the election, initially said, we'll give it a look. He has since said it's a non-starter in his caucus, so that's where the leaders are at.
Governor Walker had added drug testing requirements for Medicaid recipients during his administration, and Governor Evers said he'd like to eliminate those. What did Republican members of the committee have to say about the requirements last week?
They say that these are important to getting people into the workforce. Representative Mike Rorcas said we should be testing people and getting them the treatment they need so they can be employed. Very similar to the arguments they made when they passed these drug testing requirements during the Walker administration. So this is not something that they want to give up. This might be the kind of thing that they just pull out of the budget.
Does the governor have the ability to change those rules? Because if you look at the lame duck session and that impact, can the governor do anything there?
I think the answer as of right now is no, because of the way that some of these court decisions have played out. If you look strictly at the stuff that Republicans passed in the lame duck session in December, they restricted Governor Evers' power to do that. So they said that while Governor Walker had the power to rescind these waivers that set up stuff like drug testing, work requirements for public benefits programs, Governor Evers does not have the power under the laws Republicans passed. So those laws were initially struck down by a judge, but that particular one that we're talking about right now is on hold.
We're looking at events at the Capitol with Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief, here for our State Capitol Report. Sean, before the governor officially announced his budget, there was this grumbling suggestion Republican-controlled legislature would create their own budget instead of working off the governor's proposals. Is that still on the table?
I think so. We still don't know exactly what that means, but every chance that they get to talk about what they're going to do with the budget, Republicans tend to find a new way of saying, we're going to do our own. So last week, it was Republican Representative John Nygren, the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee from Marinette, said these hearings were an opportunity for a reset of the budget. Essentially, let's start over, and we're going to start over our way. Every chance, you know, they get, they throw something like that in. So I say that we don't know what that means exactly yet, because you just don't know what that means until they start taking some votes on this thing. It is difficult to entirely scrap a governor's budget, which is built with the help of, you know, budget departments within all of his agencies. And it kind of fits together like a puzzle. If you start taking that out, it can create unexpected headaches. And so we don't know what that means until Republicans start doing it.
Well, 1 week ago, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau released a report predicting Wisconsin would have over $1 billion imbalance. Do we know if those numbers are influencing lawmakers' decisions as they kind of formulate their response to this budget?
I think for Republicans, those numbers are sort of an I told you so. They're saying that, look, we've been telling you for a while there's too much revenue in this budget, too much spending. When you have too much spending and you end up with a structural imbalance like that, you know, which is that, I mean, I guess that's what Republicans are saying. Look, this is exactly what we warned you about, and we can't go down this path.
Can you compare that at all to shortfalls in the past?
Yeah, I mean, so there were some structural shortfalls under Governor Walker, too. So he initially came into office and got rid of this term that we call the structural imbalance. But then it came back. I mean, it's not something that ever entirely went away during his administration. So it was gone. It was back. It was reduced again. Under Evers' budget here, it would be back again.
The structural deficit.
Yeah, yeah. It's a projection, but it's one way of looking at the budget in terms of, you know, how much are you spending and what would you do if, you know, revenue just stopped? Like, what would happen to the budget?
Right. And it's also this moving target because it's based on, you know, taxes and you know, people in a region and moving out of a region. I mean, there's got to be some flux to that.
There definitely is. And, you know, Wisconsin, like every state, is so subject to the national economy. And, you know, a slight uptick or downtick in the national economy can affect us in very big ways. I think, you know, it can also be telling, though, to look at the ending balance of a governor's budget as a governor presents it. And Evers' budget would not leave much money at the end of this 2-year budget. So kind of set aside the projections of a structural deficit. If you just look at what Governor Evers is saying would be the ending balance, there's not a lot of room for error there. Everything would have to go as planned in terms of how much the state brings in and how much it spends.
Well, on Friday, Joint Finance Committee held its first public hearing on the budget in Janesville, and these public hearings are going to be moving, I guess, around the state. What do we know about that event, and is the public responding?
What we know about that event, and our colleague Bridget Bowden covered that, is that some of the groups that have the most to gain from this budget came out in force to support it. So there were a lot of people out there supporting the school funding portion of this budget. I mean, that is, as we mentioned, this is a major piece of the budget. This would be a big influx of funding for schools. And so public school advocates were out supporting it. People were out in force supporting the Medicaid expansion, taking the Medicaid money, taking that $320 million in the budget, expanding BadgerCare to 82,000 people. That's another major theme at this hearing. Another one that Bridget reported is that people were out in support of this new tax on e-cigarettes, which is, I guess, not terribly surprising given the way that these public hearings on the budget have gone. We haven't heard as much about the tax on e-cigarettes, I think, but at these public hearings over the years, anti-tobacco groups have always had a presence at these things. And that's a big part of what these public hearings are, is which groups have constituents, which groups are organized.
Who turns out?
And the anti-tobacco groups have always been there at these things, and so they like the e-cig tax.
Well, Sean, thanks for keeping us in the know.
You're welcome.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief, co-host of the WPR Politics Podcast. And join us tomorrow at 1 for the annual State of the Tribes address, streaming online at WPR.org. Oneida Nation Chairman Tehasi Hill presents the address before a joint session of the legislature live from the Capitol. That's the State of the Tribes address tomorrow afternoon at 1, streaming online at WPR.org. Up next is news. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Talking about Milwaukee's lead issues as the state capitol report continues. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Governor Tony Evers declared 2019 the year of clean drinking water, and he put numbers on Wisconsin's lead crisis in his State of the State speech in January.
Removing lead service lines could cost over $2 billion, but Pew Charitable Trust estimates that for every dollar we spend on replacing lead drinking water lines, we will see a 133% return on our investment in higher lifetime earnings and better health outcomes.
Is your family affected by lead poisoning? Do you have a lead service line? Has your child been tested for lead exposure? Share your situation, your questions at 800-642-1234. Jeanette Kowalik is Commissioner of Health at the City of Milwaukee Health Department. Commissioner Kowalik, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you've been holding these lead-safe resource fairs last week. Can you tell us about why the health department decided to hold these fairs and what you're trying to do with this outreach?
Oh, absolutely. So childhood lead poisoning prevention continues to be a priority for the City of Milwaukee. And there's a number of city departments, including Milwaukee Water Works and Neighborhood Services, that play into this get coordinated response to eliminate all sources of lead in the environment. We needed to ramp up our presence and really going into the community and providing access to resources, providing credible and factual information from a number of city departments, as well as our community partners at 16th Street and SDC. So we started our first series of these lead-safe resource fairs last week, which also marked National Public Health Week. So our goal is to host these events on a regular basis and really hit these areas of the City of Milwaukee that continue to be plagued with high incidence of childhood lead poisoning.
How extensive is the lead pipe problem in Milwaukee? What do we know right now?
So this is one point that we as a health department are trying to work to pivot and address a little bit. Lead poisoning comes from a variety of sources, but according to our data, the primary source continues to be paint and dust and soil and then water. So when we talk about prevention, we're talking about it from this more well-rounded perspective and not just pipes, because we also understand that there's some issues here with just focusing on the pipe piece, where you have lead laterals. I mean, Milwaukee's an old town. As Governor Evers noted, it would be extremely expensive to remove all of the lead service lines. So there's some preventive measures that are in place to prevent leaching or corrosion. But sometimes some of the lead service lines, you know, we have very cold winters and there may be breaks and things like that where they have to be replaced and prioritized. So the cost of that is extremely expensive, but the cost of abating homes for lead paint is something that is costly, but we have funds, we have resources from our federal partners that we use to help abate homes in the city of Milwaukee. So eliminating any sources of lead poisoning from the paint or exterior and interior of the home.
And going back to the service lines, there are at least 70,000 households in Milwaukee with lead pipes carrying city water. What about those households?
Yeah, so those households, there's something that Milwaukee Water Works has done for a while. They use phosphorus and they add it to the water supply, and it prevents, it like creates like a coating in the pipes to prevent the lead from leaching into the water supply. But one point I also want to make, aside from lead service lines, is that, you know, some of these older homes, they still have lead pipes, lead plumbing, you know, within the home. So, you know, when we're talking about doing replacements, you know, that we also have to add that into the equation, the homeowner's responsibility for replacing the pipes within their home, as well as any fixtures.
We're talking with Jeanette Kowalik, who is commissioner for the City of Milwaukee Health Department. And Milwaukeeans, we want to hear from you. Does your home have lead service lines? Will you be getting them replaced? And can you afford the bill? Are you confident that the city has a good plan to replace lead pipes? Why or why not? Do you worry about what to do in the meantime before pipes can be replaced? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jeanette, what are the health risks associated with lead exposure?
Oh, definitely. So, you know, lead is a metal, and it, you know, metal that's not good for the human body. So we tend to see more adverse effects with lead exposure, increased exposure to lead when humans are developing. So that's why we tend to focus on children under the age of 6 that can have permanent damage, central nervous system, brain damage related to exposure to elevated lead. So that can cause learning disabilities, behavioral issues, a host of other issues. So our goal, again, is to eradicate lead in the environment because it's an investment in you know, the survival and enabling Milwaukeeans to live their best lives, which is the new vision of the health department, by the way.
So in February this year, the HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, allowed Milwaukee to resume its lead abatement efforts. What is the significance of that?
Oh, that's huge. So I want to clarify one thing with that. So the HUD, that money or that was related to abatements of homes, is just one source of funding for abatement. The city has other resources to pay for the costs of abatement or removing sources of lead paint and other sources in homes. So the HUD stop work order has enabled us to be able to use the money that's tied to the HUD grant that we had. So the other point about this is, you know, that the federal agency, the Housing and Urban Development Agency, has very strict and very standardized procedures and protocols for using the funding. So it enables us to make sure that we're doing things the way that we're supposed to do them. I know that's been, you know, an issue in the past at the Milwaukee Health Department, how the lead program used to be nationally recognized and then over the years kind of disintegrated or deteriorated. So now that the HUD grant is, we're able to use it, we are also able to benefit from some of the compliance and rigorous standards that are tied to using HUD funding.
Let's go to Judy now, joining us from Manitowoc. Hi, Judy. What's on your mind?
Hi, Kate. And yes, I live on Waldo Boulevard in Manitowoc. And we are having the lead pipe replacement take place next month. We all received a letter from Manitowoc Public Utilities that homeowners were responsible for the payment of this lead pipe replacement, and that it would cost homeowners anywhere from $1,500 to $6,000 or more. And I know your guest mentioned some funding resources, but I wonder if you would have a little more to say on, you know, how the homeowner can afford this. Many of us cannot afford this and are retired and on fixed income. What are the any allocations that might be available to help homeowners pay for this?
Judy, thanks. Commissioner, what can homeowners do to be able to afford this chunk of money?
So the HUD funding is not for lead service line replacement. There are other resources through Milwaukee Water Works to help homeowners with lead service line replacement. There's an opportunity, I guess, to spread out the expense over your tax bill. So I would recommend, because, you know, we again have a whole area. Karen Detmer, she's this superintendent of Milwaukee Water Works, and she's doing a wonderful job. So I would recommend going to Milwaukee Water Works website, and they have information as to how to access the programs and resources that they have for homeowners that would like to move forward with lead service line replacement. Because yes, it is extremely expensive. I mean, that's something that we're struggling with here in the city of Milwaukee, where you have some, you know, put homeowners that still occupy properties, and then you have some of these investor-owned properties where they're, you know, they have dozens and dozens of homes and units, and replacing lead service lines would be a very expensive endeavor. So we recognize that tends to be a barrier.
Commissioner, HUD's investigation of the Milwaukee Health Department looked at the city's mishandling of childhood lead prevention programs. How can you ensure that these problems won't happen again?
Well, this is just, to me, coming in, I've been on board for 7 months. It's a classic management issue. If you're not providing oversight, providing staff with regular feedback, communication, accountability, coaching, training, then things fall through the cracks. So since I've been on board, we have been diligently working to improve the lead program, fixing a hole, if you will, and we are working on developing and updating policies and procedures, providing training, because there's a number of classifications of staff that work in the city of Milwaukee Health Department's lead program. We have public health nurses. We have lead risk assessors. We have other auxiliary positions that are a part of the program. And, you know, it's a very coordinated response. So everyone needs to use the same blueprint, the same game plan to prevent childhood lead poisoning in the city of Milwaukee.
We're talking with the city of Milwaukee's commissioner, health commissioner Jeanette Kowalik from the Milwaukee Health Department. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know been affected by lead paint or lead pipes in your home? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking about Milwaukee's lead abatement and testing on this edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last year, more than 24,000 kids under the age of 6 in Milwaukee were tested for lead poisoning. Here's Mayor Tom Barrett last week, courtesy of WITI-TV.
We want that test number to be even higher, and we encourage every parent in every community to get their kids tested annually, especially from birth to age 3.
Have you had your child tested for lead exposure? Does your home have lead service lines? Will you be getting them replaced, and can you afford it? Are you confident that the city has a good plan to replace lead pipes? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. The City of Milwaukee's Health Department Commissioner Jeanette Kowalik stays with us. Commissioner, as we heard Mayor Tom Barrett there, he wants that number of kids tested to go even higher. Is this something that really needs to be coordinated with perhaps pediatricians at well check visits?
Absolutely. So this is a part of the well child checkup, actually. And we go by this 3x3. So children should be tested 3 times by the age of 3. And if a child has not been tested by the age of 3, the child should be tested once a year until the age of 6. Screening is one of the public health's most useful resources or tools. Once we screen, then that gives us the ability to treat or deal with the source of whatever exposure. So we do have medical directors and a very solid relationship with many of the pediatricians and family practice physicians in the area. And we continue to promote how important it is for them to be consistent with lead poisoning prevention through testing.
What happens if that test result comes back and there is lead exposure, a high level of lead in that child? What happens?
So at that point, that's when we have this obligation to act swiftly. So there's no safe level of lead in the body. So that's one thing. But we do break out the levels of response based off of the severity of the lead in blood. So we go by the measure of micrograms per deciliter. So anything under 5, we still provide some type of correspondence and notification to the parent that there has been some exposure and what they need to do to reduce that. And then, you know, of course, mandating some follow-up at that point. But anything over 5 to 19, is where we're definitely pushing for another checkup with the physician. And also there needs to be just some examination of how that lead test was taken. There's two types. There's capillary, which is like the finger stick, and then there's the venous, which is like a regular blood draw. So once, if it's a capillary, then we move to doing a venous test to confirm. And then we also require another test, another venous test in 3 to 4 months to check if the lead level is the same or if it's going down. After 19, once we get to like 20 to 44, that's where things start picking up and being more severe. And then we use the level of 1 to 3 months for another venous test as well as other preventive measures. And anything over 45 is like where there's hospitalization. So that's called a procedure called chelation. And that's one point that was mentioned. We had a hearing last month at our a public safety committee, and our partner from Children's Hospital of Wisconsin noted that they're seeing higher or more severe lead poisoning, not necessarily like an increase in the number of kids, but for those kids that they're detecting or they're getting the lead samples from, blood samples from, that they are having more severe lead poisoning. So it's definitely a cause for concern that we need to really ramp up our efforts between the health department and clinical providers and parents and teachers in the community that we're really working to eradicate all sources of lead in the environment, and that we're educating families about all sources of lead poisoning and providing assistance to eliminate those sources.
Let's bring in Rachel now, joining us from Muskego. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, my name is Rachel. I live in Muskego, but my granddaughter lives in Bayview, which is one of the areas that has sewer lines or lateral lines. And she will be 2 in June. And we were able to get from the health department a water filter. You had an option of one that would go on your faucet or one that would go on your countertop. Once you receive those tool, you will get, there are 2 filters, one in there and one replacement. After that, individuals are on their own for purchasing these. My concern is people may not be able to afford to purchase them. They're like $35 each when you, and the other option is you can't even buy them in the store. You have to purchase them online, and many people don't have access to that. I'm lucky we're able to do that, but I know many people don't, and so I'm concerned about that, that after a year, they're kids are just going to be back to drinking the water that has lead in it.
Commissioner, what can be done about water filters?
Yeah, definitely. So our water filter distribution program is something that you know, some other older cities in the country are not doing. So that's one thing that we would like to say, that, hey, we realize that this is a problem. Again, we're coming from the perspective of eliminating all sources of lead in the environment. So the water filters are definitely a way to prevent exposure, and we understand that there's a cost associated with doing that. My recommendation, again, is that we're doing these lead free, lead safe resource fairs. We are handing out kits with those water filters. Last week we were at Bradley Tech and North Division High School, and we'll continue to promote those, but also by just contacting the Milwaukee Health Department, where we have filters, and you know that your relative or the child is under six, so you would continue to qualify for the free filter. That's something that I normally hear when I go out in a community, is people that don't have kids under six or are not pregnant or of childbearing age, and the cost and concern of being able to afford water filters. I mean, this is definitely a budget issue. If the city were to provide water filters to everyone, we would have to have some funding to do that. So we continue to advocate for funding in the health department budget to be able to prevent childhood lead poisoning, and as well as other public health issues.
Commissioner, according to the city of Milwaukee, the lead levels in the drinking water are within range deemed safe by the EPA, but there's still a lot of concern out there about whether drinking water in Milwaukee is safe. What do we know there?
So this is 1.2, where there's water samples that can be collected. So say if a child has lead poisoning and our staff go out to the home, they offer the family or the parent the option of providing a water sample so that we can see where things are at. Now, the issue with water sampling or for lead is that it's so variable. Like, you literally have to get it at certain times. Like, it has to sit overnight. You get it in the morning. There's a lot of steps to getting a good water sample, and so that this variability can be all over the place. So even though we offer that voluntary option, you know, if the family or the parent's not following the procedure of when to collect the sample, you know, and all of that, then it can create some variation in the sample. And we have a lab at the Milwaukee Health Department on the second floor of the Zeidler Municipal Building, and they do sampling and screening and things like that too. So, again, it's just a matter of having the funding to be able to provide more resources to families, making sure families are educated if they are tasked with obtaining water samples, how to do so in a way that would be most beneficial.
Commissioner, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Jeanette Kowalik is Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee Health Department. Just ahead, we talked to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation about Work Zone Awareness Week and what drivers should know as they take to the roads. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.